We started last week talking about the church in Sardis, and we will review a little bit of that and pick back up where we left off. Just to kind of again run through what we talked about. We talked about Jesus is speaking to this church. He's the one that holds the seven stars, and he has the seven spirits of God, ultimately meaning he knows everything going on within this church. He tells them that they have a name, that they are alive, but they're dead. So everything is not what it seems. Does that happen a lot of times in life? Now think about it. There are a lot of things in this life not what they seem. I think when it comes to that in general today, like, I think one reason our young people have so much problems is because of social media, because you see things presented as if everything is perfect, right? But can you take a picture and can you trim about 10 pounds of fat off of you in a picture? Yeah, you make yourself look a lot better, right? And you can lift this and you know, shrink, you know, whatever it is, you can change it and you can make it appear to be something that it's not, right? And that's what this church was. This church appeared to be good, but it was not what it seemed. And so, you know, even though with this church, you and I might not have known it, you know, if there was a church across town, I just say, and we think everything's good, really doesn't matter what we think anyways, does it? The Lord is the one that searches, you know, the hearts and knows everything for real. So the Lord is the one that said it's not what it seems. It looks good on the outside. It has a reputation, this church does. He says, you have a name that you're alive, but you're dead. And we talked about, you know, we looked at this slide, and we talked about autopsy of a dead church, and Ron loves that picture, right? And we talked about the main things to keep the main thing. And when we went through this book that I found, and I didn't read the book, but I read an overview of the book, and we talked about some of the things out of that book. We'll just run through them quickly. Number one, in this book, the guy says a church that dies, it's always a slow process. You don't usually see it happening before your eyes because it's happening gradually. And I bring all of this back up because I want us here at Willow Avenue to be aware. We don't ever want this to happen. You know, we don't ever want to be the church in Sardis, you know, that's talked about. So we've got to take this serious. And we've got to realize that when a church does die, it is a slow process. It takes years and years, and it's just a gradual thing. And sometimes we don't pay attention, but we've got to wake up and see it. We've talked about how that a lot of churches, they make a hero of the past, you know, and they look at those past numbers that they had, and we talked about we could do that here too. You know, a few years ago, man, we was a lot bigger than we are now. But we can't focus on that. We've got to focus on right now. Because what we were then, that's not what we are now. So if we don't let go of the past and focus on the present, then we're in trouble. We talked about sometimes when churches begin to die, it's because they disconnect from the community. They don't know who is around. They don't know, you know, the changes that have taken place, and they're not involved in the community. And sometimes churches do that. You know, you focus on inner yourself. A lot of times, again, hand in hand with the last one, the budget's going to move inward, and you're just focusing on keeping house and keeping everybody happy and comfortable and all of those things, and we can't do that. We talked about when the Great Commission comes the Great Omission. And when we fail to fulfill the Great Commission, we are on a pathway to death. And we talked about that even here at Willow Avenue. This is something we need to work on. When I say we, I'm talking about me. I'll stand down here in the sermons up there, right? Hit me in the back. And it's something we need to work on. We're not converting very many people, and something we need to be more diligent. And again, the Bible doesn't say we have to convert a certain amount of people, but we do have to sow the seed. And you'll never convert anybody if we don't sow the seed, right? So we need to be seed sowers and let God give the increase. And again, the last one we talked about was personal preference sometimes makes every decision based upon just what you like and not necessarily what's good and right and going to be for the best. All right. When I was looking into this and the more I researched it, this guy wrote this book several years ago, and I found an article that this guy wrote, and he's not a member of the church, and he was writing this, and this was primarily denominations and all these things, but again, we can learn some valuable things. And he said he wrote this book, and it was an overwhelming response to the book, so he took all the letters and comments and whatever things were sent to him, and he made some observations that I think that we can learn from. All right, the number one thing is most members of the dying church, he says, they don't see it coming. Many of the members are still dealing with the shock of the death of their churches when we interviewed him. So most people don't ever see it. What is one reason most people don't see that things are not going well? Don't want to, right? A lot of times that's the case. A lot of times it's the case that if you were at a place that you love, you never want to believe or to see anything negative. Does that happen sometimes? You know, you don't want to just open up and say, hey, you know, maybe this isn't going the best, and maybe we could improve, because sometimes we're so pro-congregation that we're at that we don't want to see any flaws. You know, sometimes people are like that with their families, right? You ever with your family not want to see any flaws, and if somebody says something about your family, you jump all over them, even though they might be right, because you're blinded to the fact of maybe what's going on right in front of you. And we could be the same way in the church. We could be blinded by what is going on here. And again, I say all that to get us to realize we don't want to be like that. We don't want to be like that. We want to be able to see it coming. All right, number two, he says many of the leaders, many of the members and leaders of these churches would have begun revitalization efforts if they knew how. You think that's true? You ever had a problem and you realized that maybe there was a problem in anything in life and you really didn't know how to fix it? What do you do then? A lot of times, what do? Ignore it. Sweep it under the rug, right? If I don't know what to do and I don't know the solution, then you know, maybe it'll just fix itself. Maybe it'll go away. Maybe, whatever. But we can't do that here. Yeah. We do that a lot, don't we, Bill? We think somebody else is going to come along and fix it. And ultimately, maybe that's one of the bigger ones. When you look around and you see a problem, you think, well, that's an elder's problem. The elders say, well, that's a preacher's problem. The preachers say, well, you know, the membership's got to all be involved and we got to fix this. And everybody's blaming everybody else. And who's doing anything about it? A lot of times, nobody, right? So we have to address the problems, see the problems, and then we've got to come up with a solution to fix the problems. And again, those are not easy things. And number three, he said in all of these letters and things that come back to him, minor issues is what were killing churches. Most of these churches did not die because of some major heresy. They did not die because of a mass exodus of the population surrounding them. They died because they lost their focus. They died because they fought over things that really did not matter. They majored on minors to the point of death. And that's true, isn't it? That's true. Of all the problems that I've been involved in with the church most of my life, the vast majority of them are over something silly. Just absolutely silly. Somebody didn't get their way. Somebody didn't like a decision. Somebody didn't whatever. And it was just silly. I've never been in the middle of a problem that was actually over something doctrinal. Hadn't happened to me. It might have happened to you. I'm talking about something doctrinal that was actually biblically wrong. That's not been it. It's been all over matters of opinion. Just somebody didn't like a decision. And they, you know, wanted something different to happen. So these minor things is what happens. And a lot of times what we do is we allow those minor things, because of selfishness, to cause us to act in ways that we shouldn't act, and the church suffers. Yeah, let them grow out of proportion. That's true. Little things left undealt with, they grow and they grow and they grow, and it festers and it becomes a bigger problem. All right, number four, the silent majority killed churches. He says some members saw the problems. They knew the power brokers in the church. They knew the problems within the church. They heard the constant chorus of not so well-intending critics attacking church leadership, but they said nothing and did nothing. The silence was a dagger in the back of these churches. We said a lot of times we don't see the problem because we don't want to see the problem. But what happens when you know, if there's some problems here that needs to be addressed in this church, and you know it, and you do nothing about it, whose fault is that? If you see it, if you see an issue, if you see something we need to work on and we can fix and we can improve upon, and you say nothing, whose fault is that? Yeah, it's your fault. That's exactly right. But sometimes what people do, they see it, and maybe they've got a solution to the problem, but they just sit back, nah, nobody will listen to me anyways, right? Nobody wants to hear what I've got to say, and, you know, I'm just a nobody. And listen, in the church, everybody's a somebody, or should be, right? Doesn't matter how long you've been here, doesn't matter how old you are, if you've got a solution to a problem that we're facing, speak up, tell somebody. We've got an eldership, I'm not trying to toot their horn, but they'll listen to you, I promise. They always have. When I came here, that was one of my first things I talked to them about. I said, are you guys willing to listen, you know, if you've got a, you know, an idea? And they could probably tell you that. I don't know if they remember that or not. But I asked them, would you be willing to listen if you got an idea? And they said, yeah, absolutely. And they always have. Yes, sir. Right, right. Sometimes it takes years to fix problems, especially problems that's taken years to get to the point that they're at. I've told you guys this story before. I had a friend, and he went somewhere, and he was going to try to solve all this church's problem in one business meeting. And it was a mess. And he talked to me about it, and I said, you know how many years it took to get to that point? I said, you think you're going to fix it like that? I said, it's going to take, it may take years to fix the problems. It's not going to happen easily. So, again, all of these things come back to realizing there's a problem and addressing the problem. All right, number five, and I know this is talking about pastors. We don't have pastors as preachers, but, again, this book was written. The idea is still there. Some members waited for the silver bullet. He says, many of them said they were waiting on that young pastor, young preacher, who would attract new young families. Some of the churches got these new young preachers, and they ran them off when change began to take place. Most of the churches, though, never got the young pastor which they waited for until they actually died. So isn't that sometimes what we do? We maybe realize there's an issue, and we ultimately think, well, if we could just get person A in place, then person A would do what? Fix all of our problems, right? Is there any one person that can fix all the problems? No, because it's not one person that caused all the problems. Got it to that point. It takes the whole church working together to get out of a slump, if you will, or a bad place. Whatever it is, you can't look for a silver bullet. You can't look for a quick fix. Bill said sometimes it's going to take a long time to get things better than they need to be. Right, number six, he says, a church does not have to die. Death is not inevitable. Most of the members of these churches would rather see their church die than change, and they got their wish. Now, that is a true statement. I've been to a lot of churches in the last 15 years speaking and this and that, and a lot of, I'm not talking about changing what you teach. I'm talking about changing anything, period. Most people, especially as you get older, right? You hold on to that tradition with both hands, and you won't let go of, you know, the fifth Sunday dinner. I mean, you know what I mean? If nobody is going to come, you're still going to have it because you've had it for 50 years, whatever it may be. But a lot of times that's an issue. And, you know, sometimes some traditions might need to change, and to get people more involved and more excited in whatever it may be, so we can't be so tradition-bound that we're going to allow things to die. All right. I read this in one of the commentaries on my phone yesterday, and I thought it was good. It says, praying, hoping, and wanting to change are one thing, but real change only comes with specific, focused action. Once you've determined that your church is lagging when it comes to community outreach, make concrete steps towards changing that balance. Isn't that true? You know, we can pray that Willow Avenue never dies, and we can be strong, and we can do all these good things, and we can hope that we're going to do that. We can want to do that. But what does that do? Nothing, right? You can pray about it, you can hope for it, and you can want it. But what does it take to actually do something? You got to get up off your seat, right? You got to get up off your seat, and you got to do something. You know, that's one thing that I think maybe our younger generation doesn't realize. We live in a time when people think everything should be handed to them and it should come easy. You older people, has everything come easy to you? You know, everything that I've got, I've had to get up out of bed morning before the sun comes up, and I got to get my butt to work, and I've got to do something about it. You know, and that's how I was raised. My dad didn't give me anything. He says, you get up and work. You don't get an allowance, you get to work, you know, all the time. And the same is true in the church. We can't just pray and hope and wish. We got to do something about it. So if we want things to get better, having this class is not going to cause things to get better. I can talk about it for the next 6 weeks. Is that going to fix it? Is that going to make it improve? No. No. The only way that things ever improve is it takes action. In this guy's book, he says, he gave an example of this very thing. He said there was a church leader who met with the principal of a local elementary school and asked what the school needed most. They needed fresh paint, and 100 members of that particular church, whatever it was, went to the school and painted that school. You could go to that school and you could say, hey, what do you need? Well, we need paint. Well, okay, we'll pray about it. And we'll hope it, you will hope it gets it. Didn't the Bible say something about that? Didn't James say something about that? Faith without works? You know, somebody needs something and you say, depart in peace and be filled, right? You need some food, boy, I'm going to pray for you. I hope you get it. I want you to get it. What did he say? Faith without works is what? Same, it's us, right? I mean, that can be applied to us. If we want change, if we want things to improve, praying and hoping and wishing, not going to get it done. Now, that's a first step, but the only thing's going to get it done is get up and get after it. We need ideas. We need energy. We need effort. We need all of those things. All right, what about churches that die of malnutrition? As a human being, can you die of malnutrition? Can churches do the same? Yeah. Churches can do the exact same thing. You know, the diet a church consumes, and this is, again, from one of the commentaries I had on my phone, is just as important as what your body consumes. You know, if all you ever eat in your body is something sugary and sweet, what happens? You're going to have problems, right? And if all you ever eat is something just so hard, I mean, you need a balanced diet, you need something that's going to help you to grow and to flourish and all of that. And I hope that me teaching this class does that. If it doesn't, somebody else needs to be teaching this class, because the church needs meat. The Bible talks about that, right? It says you can't just always have milk. And some of you need to be eating meat, but you can't even still handle the milk. He says, so you need to be growing and you need to be feeding and you need to be improving. And a church that's going to flourish is going to be a church that's eating a balanced diet. It can't all be sweet and everything's good and everybody's going to heaven, but it can't all be everybody's going to hell either. It's got to be somewhere in the middle, a little bit of both. You got to encourage and you've got to convict all in the same time. So that's sometimes difficult for some to do, but that's what we've got to do. All right, I want to talk about this one, attendance. When a church dies, a lot of times, what's one of the first things you notice? What begins to slack off? The crowd goes down. The attendance goes down. All right. What causes the attendance to go down? Do what?
Preach too long.
Oh, preach too long. Okay. All right. Preacher gets the blame for everything, right?
They have a problem when they don't fix.
They do what? Okay, that problem that doesn't get fixed. What else? What has caused more problems with church attendance than anything else, probably in your lifetime?
Gossip.
What'd you say?
Gossip.
That causes a ton of problems. People get turned off, right? They get their feelings hurt. The live streaming, in my opinion, has caused more people to miss church than anything else in my lifetime. COVID hit and start streaming it. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. It's something. I mean, it's a good thing. You know, if you're sick, if you're traveling, if you're whatever, it's great. But watching something on TV doesn't replace being here, does it? But we live in the society, in the time that we live in, that's what people think, right? It's a lot easier to sit in your pajamas and kick back in your recliner with your feet up, watching it on your telephone, you know, and scrolling on, watching on your TV and scrolling on something on your phone and eating popcorn. That's a lot easier than getting ready and coming out here. But there's a million different reasons that people don't come anymore, but what can we do about it? I mean, we could talk about all the reasons. That doesn't fix the problem. What can we do about it? We said if we want change, we can't just sit and wish and hope and pray. We got to do something about it. We had, we had this Sunday. We had 307 Sunday before last, but we're running only about 150 on Wednesday night. What does that mean? That means half the people aren't here. They were here Sunday, right? Well, what do we do about that? I said, boy, I hope they come. I wish they'd come next week. I'll pray for them. Is that going to get them here next week? What do we do about it? What if we looked around us and we, you know, get our phone out and text somebody and say, hey, I missed you last Wednesday night, or I missed you tonight, and you do that when you get home, or tomorrow, hey, I missed you last night. Sometimes does maybe a little bit of guilt go a long way? I don't mean it in a bad way, but you guys know what I mean. Somebody tells me they miss me, then it makes me think, right? It makes me think, well, you know, maybe they did miss me. Maybe I do need to be there. And I will tell you this. I've talked to multitudes of people in the last several years. They get their feelings hurt more when they miss and nobody checks on them than anything else. I've had people tell me, well, I was going somewhere else and there's not a soul reached out to me. I've had people tell me that left here. I know that's kind of point blank, but it's true. I've had people that have left here have told me they went with two or three people in that big old church that reached out to me and told me that they missed me. I thought people would miss me. Apparently they didn't. Now what does that say? What do we need to do? Better, right? We need to do better. And again, when I say we, I'm talking about me too. You know, it's easy to let people slip through the cracks, isn't it? It's easy, you know, to just kind of come and do your thing and talk to who you want to talk to. And I mean, we all do it, right? And it's easy just to kind of let so-and-so, you know, that you hadn't seen in a month, slip through the cracks. And what happens when you hadn't seen them in a month, and then before you long, it's 2 months, and then next thing you know, they're not going anywhere anymore. And maybe 6 months later, somebody says, hey, whatever happened to so-and-so? And somebody's like, I don't know. I was at a place a year or two ago, and I asked about a guy that's name was in the bulletin as a deacon. And I said, last time I was here, which had been a long time, I said, he was here. I said, where's he at? Well, we don't really know. You don't really know. Well, he ain't been here in a long time. He's a deacon here, and you don't have a clue where he's at? Well, I heard that he might be going so-and-so. I mean, we laugh at that, but that's not funny, is it? That's not funny, but that happens. And it shouldn't happen. So this is something that we need to work on. This church at Sardis, it should wake us up. I mean, it should get us to realize, man, that can happen right here just as easy as it happened there. They didn't have any doctrinal problems that we hear about. They weren't being persecuted that we hear about. None of that is said. They were just a church that were living in a good place, and they had plenty of things. It was a wealthy place. We watched the video of the history there. Sounds like here, right? We live in a good place. We've all got plenty, everything that we need, and sometimes what's most important slips right through the cracks. And this whole attendance thing, that's big. That's big, and we need to realize that. You know, you look around you tonight, most of you don't ever move where you sit, right? That's not a bad thing at all, because you know who's around you. So look around you tonight and see all these empty seats, and then look around you Sunday and see who's here, and maybe invite them next Wednesday night. Tell them the teacher's not much, but, you know, tell them you'll buy them dinner after church. I don't know, whatever it takes. We'll get Ron to hand out $20 bills when people come in, right? I'd get them here. You'll be first in line, right? All right. So, all right. In Matthew chapter 23, Jesus dealt with this very similar thing here. He talks about those woes unto those scribes and the Pharisees, right? Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. You know, you shut up the kingdom of heaven against men, and when you do make proselytes, you make them twofold more a child of hell than you. And he talks about all those things, but he talks to them and he tells them, he says, you wash the outside of the cup, but the inside's filthy, right? He says, you're like whitewashed tombs, he said. He says, the outside of these tombs was beautiful and immaculate, and they looked just like you would want them to look, but he says, inside they're full of dead men's bones. If that doesn't describe this church at Sardis, I don't know what does, right? They clean the outside of the cup and the platter, but they don't clean what's the inside. If you're drinking out of a cup, if the outside's a little bit dirty, that's one thing. But if the inside's filthy, do you want to drink out of it? No. That's where the most important part is. And speaking of the church, isn't that true? You know, if what people see on the outside, you know, we want people to see good, but we should be far more concerned about what's on the inside. We want to have a good reputation, but we want to have a good reputation that's built upon actual factual things and not just having a good reputation for good reputation's sake, if that makes sense. So read Matthew 23. We won't take time to do it. We don't really have time. I want to finish this church tonight. But it gives us an insight into what he's talking about. All right, let's go back to the text and let's read this and go over it, and we'll finish the church in Sardis tonight. All right, verse 2, he tells them, be watchful and strengthen the things which remain that are ready to die, for I have not found your works perfect before God. Remember therefore how you have received and heard, hold fast and repent. Therefore, if you will not watch, I will come upon you as a thief, and you will not know what hour I will come upon you. You have a few names even in Sardis who have not defiled their garments, and they shall walk with me in white, for they are worthy. He who overcomes shall be clothed in white garments, and I will not blot out his name from the book of life, but I will confess his name before my Father and before his angels. He who has an ear to hear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. All right, so he's going to offer this church some counsel. He's told them that, you know, you've got a name that you're alive, but you're dead. But he doesn't want to just walk away and says, okay, that's it. No, he always wants people to do better. He always wants you and I to do better. We serve a long-suffering God, and he's long-suffering with this church. He tells them, number one, be watchful. Be watchful. What happens to cause us to get apathetic in our life and to kind of drift the wrong direction? What happens? We stop paying attention, right? We just kind of rolling with the flow and taking whatever comes with us, and we're not really diligent and all those things. And that's why he says, be watchful. Be watchful and strengthen the things which remain, because they're ready to die. So this church had things going on. This church, it could be something good. It still had some things going on. If you remember, the first thing he said to them is, I know your works. Know your work. So they were, you know, doing things as a congregation, but they weren't doing things that maybe they needed to be doing. So God always expects us to grow. The church at Thyatira, the one before this, they were growing. They had some issues, but they were growing at least, and they needed to work through those issues. This church wasn't really growing. This church was just existing. He says, and you're going to have to strengthen the things that remain. You're going to have to get busy. He says, I have not found your works perfect. What that means is he hadn't found those things completed. A lot of times in your Bible, the word perfect can be translated, it's the Greek word teleos, and it can be translated mature or complete, anything like that. And this comes from the same word here. He says, your works haven't been completed. Now, how many of you have projects started at home that are still under construction? All of you's lying, right? Every one of you's got it, right? You got stuff that you started and you got out. Maybe, you did part of it and then you just kind of let it go, right? And that's okay. Who cares if you started painting the porch and you didn't finish? That really doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things. But what about in the church? What about if we start something? Maybe after all this, you know, everybody gets kind of motivated and somebody comes up with an idea, hey, let's do this, and we start doing that, and then we just kind of let it all fizzle out, right? Don't we do that all the time? We come up with something and then we just kind of let it fizzle out. And that's what this church was doing. He says, I've not found your works perfect. You're not completing the things that you're trying to do. You know, maybe, again, somebody's got an idea, but you just let it go. And he says, that's not going to cut it. That's not going to cut it, and that's not what I want from you. He says, remember, therefore, how you have received and heard. Remember what he told the church at Ephesus? And that's been several weeks ago that we talked about that. They'd left their first love, and he told them three things. He says, I want you to remember, I want you to repent, and I want you to return. Those three R's. He told this church the same thing. He says, I want you to remember. I want you to remember how you were, maybe. You know, I said we don't hold on to the past, but if there's a church and at one time that church was growing and flourishing, remember back to what you were doing right then and go back to doing that. Go back to what it was that got you to that point that you were growing and everybody was excited and all of these things. Whatever it was, go back to it. That's what he taught the church at Ephesus. Remember, return. Remember, repent, and return. Change your mind and go back to it, and you know, hopefully you can get this situation figured out. He says, if you will not watch, I'll come upon you as a thief. All right? If you remember when we watched the video, you know, this town in Sardis, if you remember, it had those walls that were straight up. Two times that city, they thought the city was impenetrable, that nobody could take it. But two times in history, the city was taken. If you remember why, what happened? The guards were what? Sleeping. And in essence, did not the Lord know this? Yeah, he knew this. It was part of history, but he knew that. And he tells the church the same thing. Wake up. Wake up. Why would he need to tell us to wake up? Because sometimes we're oblivious, right? We're oblivious to whatever's going on around us. And again, it goes back to all these things that we talked about. We can't see the problem sometimes because we don't want to see the problem. We don't want to see anything wrong. We just kind of want to, you know, live in our fairy tale world. It's better to live in a fairy tale world, right? We all prefer to be there, and that's great and good. But sometimes we need to realize, you know, what's really going on, and hopefully we can fix it. He says, if you don't watch, I'll come as a thief. I'll be just like, you know, the people that overtook the city while you're asleep. So don't get too comfortable. Don't get too comfortable. Sometimes when we get too comfortable in our lives, in anything, what happens? Bad times come. We're not expecting it. You know, if you just, nobody's broken into your house in 5 years, you just going to quit locking the doors all of a sudden? We get complacent. You're right. We just think, well, everything's been going all right this long. Just keep going, right? Just keep going. Sometimes just keeping going is just keeping the doors open. And so we need to realize that. So he's telling them they need correction. This church was worshiping their own past, and they can't do that. They were more concerned with the externals. They were more concerned with what everybody thought about them than what they really were. And they loved the system more than they loved Christ. They loved the town that they lived in and the material things that they had, and they were far more concerned with the material than they were the spiritual. We'll hurry and get through this. All right, there is some commendation here that he's going to brag on a few people. He says, verse 4, you have a few names even in Sardis who have not defiled their garments, and they shall walk with me in white. Even though this church, he says, was dead, and we've talked about this, and the next slide even talks about that, and all these churches are still faithful people. These churches that he's coming down hard on, not all of them were that way. And even today, sometimes we come down on a whole congregation, but doesn't mean everybody there is doing wrong. And we need to realize that. The church was commended, was not commended, but a few people were. The church as a whole, perhaps the leadership, I don't know. We really don't give a lot of insight. But this church as a majority was dead, but there's some good, faithful people there. And he says, you keep going. You keep going. He says, you will walk with me in white because you're worthy. What is the color white? Everything in Revelation is symbolic and figurative. What's that going to mean? Purity or victory, right? White has always stood for purity. White has always stood for victory. And so he says, you will get to do that. Those people had not defiled their garments. What does it mean to defile your garments? Allow sin to stain them, right? Proverbs chapter 6, verse 27, 28. Can a man take fire to his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Can a man walk on hot coals and his feet not be burned? You know, if you take fire to your bosom, if you just pick up a fire and you hold it to you, your clothes are going to get burned, right? Same way with sin. And he says, but not everybody has defiled their garment. Does that mean they had not sinned? No, that means they were living a life of constant penance before God and confessing those things, and he was forgiving them. All right, he says, He who overcomes shall be clothed in white garments, the same imagery is used. If you were overcome, what does that mean if you can overcome? There's an opportunity for people to repent, right? This church was dead. He was upset with them. He was not pleased at all. But here's what he said. Hey, fix it. You realize that's what the Lord is saying today? He's not standing up there with a zapper ready to zap us. He's telling us, fix it. I want you to fix it. The Lord is not willing that any should perish, but all should come to repentance, 2 Peter 3:9. Why? Because he's long-suffering. So that's the same thing he's telling here. If you will overcome, you will be arrayed in white garments. Again, white would be symbolized of being pure and being victorious. If you will do that, he says, I will not blot out his name from the book of life. If he says, if you'll overcome, I will not blot your name out of the book of life. Common sense, I know that's rare anymore, but if you don't overcome, what happens? Yeah. If you overcome, I will not blot it out. Common sense tells me if you don't, you will. So what does that teach? Once saved, always saved is what? That's a lie of the devil, isn't it? Now, I'm not saying God's up there striking us dead for every sin that we commit. If we did, none of us has a chance, right? But we can choose to walk away from God and we can just leave our faith behind and we can lose it. And that's what he's telling these people. You can walk away from me. You can choose to do nothing about this warning that I'm giving you. You can just do whatever you want to do with your life. But in essence, by doing so, you're walking away from me. And if you do that, I will blot your name out. I will blot your name out. And none of us want that for sure. He says, but if we will overcome, he will not blot our name out, and he will confess us before his Father, before his angels. Jesus says, Matthew 10, verse 32, whosoever confesses me before men, him will I confess before my Father, which is in heaven. That's the promise right here. Matthew 10, 32, write it in your Bible. He says, if you overcome, I'll confess you. And I'll say, he's mine. God hates sin, and when God looks at us, we're what? Sinful. But if Jesus says he's mine, what happens? God overlooks all of that, right? And he sees us as we are in him. I appreciate your attention.